You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
Okay, thank you so much for your engagement over the last 2 hours. It has been fascinating. And then a little bit later, at 11:30, Karima Brown's going to join me until noon, and we're going to unpack further how things are playing out behind the scenes, how the decision in terms of how to vote is being weighed up by different MPs and factions. And also looking back to Baleka's decision yesterday, we haven't really drilled down into the logic behind it. Should she get kudos for it, or did she have no choice politically? What is the significance, and how it may or may not have played out in the ANC leadership when she made that announcement? So all of that's still coming up. But for the next 20 minutes, I want us to have a different conversation. I am very glad, I know many of you are not happy that it is sufficient, but I'm glad that the Minister of Police said that there will be an arrest, and the arrest is imminent of the Deputy Minister. That is one of his colleagues. It's the right thing to do. And he didn't divulge all the details, but you would have heard in the EWN bulletin the story. And we're going to keep tabs with it. The two dominant stories in the news cycle is that one, and then the secret ballot, and then, of course, the issue around the actual Zuma vote. So those are the big issues of the day. I want to open up this conversation. Should you have a legal duty to intervene when you observe violence? In some countries, it's referred to as a Good Samaritan law, where the law forces you to be a Good Samaritan, where it's not left up to your conscience and your individual moral reasoning whether or not you want to intervene. And this has been on my mind ever since hearing that eyewitness that spoke to Xolani, who had observed the Deputy Minister of Higher Education assaulting a woman at a club. And he said at one point during that exchange with Xolani, "I don't want to lie, I'm not an angel. We were all watching for a couple of minutes before anyone did anything." And then the video, which seems like it is the video from Cubana itself, also shows there a lot of people watching. And there are many such instances. I was just saying to the producers now, every other week we see someone uploading a video that goes viral where perhaps you observe, for example, one that comes to mind was someone in a taxi running after a woman who's trying to get out of the taxi, drag her back into the taxi, and no one around them is intervening. And it's not clear to me what the right way is to respond. So here's a couple of questions I have for you and for myself. What is your ethical and your social duty? Do you have a duty to intervene or not? When it comes to the law, I asked Professor James Grant for a view, and he said before 1994, there definitely was no Good Samaritan law in South Africa. Now the situation is a bit more complex. There's no explicit law, but chances are, in line with the Constitution, there may be a duty indeed to intervene. Should the law compel you to do the right thing morally, or should the law not compel you to intervene when there's violence? So that's the second issue that I'm puzzling with. And then there's a behavioral question. Because violence is so rife in our society, I think many of us, many of you, would have been in that situation already. And I wonder how you handled it. When you see a woman being beaten up, being assaulted, when you see that kind of violence, or even between men, where one person is beating someone else up in public and you observe that, or maybe your neighbor, you can hear that there's a fight going on. How have you actually handled it? So there's a question here. There's a moral and a legal set of questions about what we should do, and I want your viewpoint on that. But then there's also a question, how have you actually handled such situations when you have found yourself in that position? And here's another example. There's a news story that was making the rounds. I don't know if you saw that one, Danao, where the strap, and I didn't see the person, but they were interviewed on one of our news channels. I think it could have been the SABC. And they said that a woman was drowning or in a river. They can swim. They could have jumped in, but there was no one to hold their phone, so they didn't jump in. I think you saw that. So that's another example of it. That doesn't involve violence, but there you have someone who says, "I'm capable of swimming. I can jump in, but I didn't jump in because I had things in my pocket." Does that only make them a bad person? Or do you think there should be a law that says, if you can swim, you have to jump in as a legal duty? What do you make of these issues? How have you handled these situations? 011-883-0702. Give us a call in Johannesburg and in Cape Town on 021-446-0567. How do you react when you see violence? And should the law force you to be a Good Samaritan? Or is that up to your individual moral decision-making process to decide how you will actually handle it? Craig, complex question. What is Craig's view?
Good morning. Last year in November, I was cleaning out cupboards and I took some stuff to a not-so-nice area of Cape Town. And on my way back, I saw a man beating up a woman to the extent that he had taken her head and her face and smashed it into the pavement. So I stopped. I jumped up my car. I ran over. I tried to break it up. They then threatened to kill me. I then walked away. I phoned the cops and said, this is what's happening. And their response was, do they look like they know each other? Because it could just be domestic violence.
Wow.
And I said, it's irrelevant. Irrelevant whether they know each other, whether they're married or not. This man had smashed this woman's face into the pavement. And so I demanded that they send someone there. 20 minutes later, I left with them throwing stones at my car. So I'm the kind of person, and I'm not largely built, I'm not extremely, you know, strong or anything like that, but I want to stand up particularly for women's, animals, and children's rights. But I'm putting my own life in danger, and this was shortly after the 16 days of activism, and I actually phoned into your radio station to report the situation. But if you're going to stop violence, you stop all violence. By being asked whether they look like they know each other is absolutely irrelevant and effectively condones the violence. And I understand the cops are under a lot of stress and strain. I understand that the situation is the wife drops the case. You know, I understand their frustration. And I understand that the chance is that when they release him, that he's going to go and beat her up again. But it's just, you go and try and help. And I mean, they were throwing stones in my car. They threatened to kill me. And actually, a police van did drive past. I don't know if they were dispatched or not. They did drive past, but no one came after 20 minutes.
Sure. There is that part to it where there may be harm to yourself, and you got to weigh that into your decision, of course, Craig. But the idea that the decision can turn on whether it's a domestic dispute or not, that to me seems completely perverse, however you think one should react. Let's go to Port Elizabeth next. Rita, welcome to the conversation.
Hi, UTDS. Thanks for having me. I do not think that there should be a law. I do think that we have a moral and social responsibility to society to act as good citizens. But I think that your own personal bodily autonomy should not be mandated by the law, as in the law shouldn't tell me that I have to help someone. I do think I should. I think most good Samaritan laws I'm familiar with are with injuries, you know, stopping to help someone on the side of the road and not necessarily intervention. But I think that a law like that will not really do anything. And I also think that it could set people up.
But let's take practical examples, right? I think the least controversial case, I think, Rita, is with respect to children, where clearly you have a duty to report child abuse. If you are aware of it, you observe it, you can see it next door. But let's talk about adults, which is a slightly gray area. We can't assume that there's equal power between adults. I will not necessarily put myself at physical risk if I call the police, knowing that I can hear screams next door every single night, and clearly someone is the victim of intimate partner violence. In that case, should I not at least have a social duty, even if not a legal duty, to pick up the phone and do something about it, short of knocking at the door and putting myself in physical harm's way?
I do think you have a social responsibility. That's what I said in the beginning. Of course, I think you should have a social responsibility, and I think people should not even have to question that. But I don't think you should have a legal responsibility. I think some of the issues of burden of proof when it comes to how long has this been going on? Do you hear it every night? Obviously, we are talking about situations that are very different from circumstance to circumstance. But I think potentially you could set yourself up for retribution. And I think in a situation that is different from the one you describe, a person to put, I see violence happening. And I have I have done this and not done this. I have intervened in a situation, and I have also driven past a situation and chosen not to intervene because of personal safety of myself and the other occupants in my car. But in non-violent situations, my first instinct is always to intervene.
That's an interesting perspective. Let's get a few more. Olani.
Hi, good morning, Eusebius. Very interesting topic to engage on, first and foremost. And I think, of course, we do, all of us, have that social duty and a moral obligation to intervene one way or the other in terms of seeing crime or violence being perpetrated in front of our eyes. And I've been doing this for multiple times and for years now, and I think I'll still be doing it, whereas I've lost a friend who went on and intervened, and he was shot. You know, we knew about it, and they intervened, and he was shot, and we lost him. But still, even today, you know, I always say to myself and to whoever, you know, amongst my peers, that, you know, I've lost a friend through this horrible intervention or this hideous crime that is being perpetrated in front of our eyes. But then if we stop or we don't do anything, it will continue happening so that it becomes a norm. So let's stop it from even beginning, from the point of argument. Just speak to people. Listen, guys, girls and girls, could you just be normal about your conversation? Yes, I might, for instance, talk it from a point of wanting to go to see good out of people. And in some situations, the circumstances will be just brutal to begin with. So I believe it's very, very, very important to intervene in one way or the other, whether you go yourself there or you involve law enforcement.
Okay, that's an interesting viewpoint. Ziyanda in Cape Town. How's it, Ziyanda?
Yes. I think in a circumstance or in different circumstances where one can help, I almost feel like you should help. I think there are different levels as to how you can intervene and what exactly you can do. But I would say that you should do, you know, what is possible. So it's if someone is much bigger than you and you would put yourself in physical danger, I don't necessarily think that you should step in and you know, also try to block physically what's happening.
Yeah.
But it's about alerting other people in the area and saying, you know, this isn't okay. It's whatever you can do at the time instead of just keeping quiet or saying, it's not my business, or I probably shouldn't, or, you know, oh, that seems too uncomfortable.
Absolutely. If you take an example that's obviously in the news currently, Ziyanda, if, you know, in the case of the deputy minister, do you think that there was a classic case where someone ought to have intervened immediately instead of being an eyewitness taking video or just being mum?
I think it's specifically in that scenario, that's really when you make a lot of noise and you say, how is anyone allowing this to happen? Where's the security? Where's management? Because I think in a lot of ways, in that circumstance, when people keep quiet, then whether it's individual, whether it's two or three other people around, feel like they have carte blanche or they have license. They've almost been given license by the people around them to carry on with what they're doing. So I think in that way, that's where it comes down to, you know, is it safer for me to take a video? Is it safer for me to shout and make a noise about this? You know, you're asking yourself, what can I do to help in this scenario, instead of just saying, well, there's nothing I can do to help, so I'm going to keep quiet.
Okay, great stuff. Thank you, Ziyanda. Love your insights. Thanks for calling in today. Kushle, good morning.
Hi, Sirius. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. How do you see it? Is it complex or is it clear-cut for you?
It's very complex, because what do you do when you're in a situation where if you do try to stop, you are putting yourself in danger, and then the next thing you die, but the woman or whoever is being abused the next day goes back to the partner, and you are trying to save him, but nothing really, you know?
Yeah, I guess there are different potential scenarios. Maybe the easier scenario to label complex is the one where you know, or you reasonably know, that you will put yourself at great personal risk. But isn't the truth, Kushle, but I'm thinking aloud now, that there are also many scenarios where the risk to yourself will be zero or minimal, but we've become so desensitized to violence and we lack so much empathy in society that often, if we are honest, we turn a blind eye even when the risks are not that high. Now everyone is calling in with the worst case scenario where you might be putting yourself in harm's way. But there are many occasions when you won't do that and we just walk on.
Let me tell you about a situation. I was in a taxi around 8 or 9 in the evening. There was a woman who wanted to get into the taxi, but there was a man who was just hitting her. It was bad, you know. And this lady had indicated to the taxi that she wanted to come inside and she wanted to go to wherever her destination was. When the taxi driver had seen what was happening, he was just like, nope, I'm not getting involved, and he tried to drive off. Another woman and myself taxi were like, wait. Like, you can clearly see that this is happening. And the police station is too far. Let's at least drop her off at the police station. And the taxi driver also went violent on us and was like, if you guys want to stay, you guys can stay. I'm not getting involved. You guys can do whatever. It's at night, and I'm not getting involved in this. What do you do in such situations then?
I don't know. I don't know. I always try, and one way of trying to think through these things is to ask yourself, if you were in that situation, what would you hope the other person would have done for you?
I guess so. But, you know, in some instances, I think maybe we have to be selfish because it's 8 or 9 o'clock at night and being led away by a taxi driver, you're also not safe. Do you understand? Yes. So you're putting not only yourself, but also the other ladies as well in danger. So it's very complex.
Okay, thank you, Kushle. I think those are legit complexities that one need to think through. Nick, welcome to the conversation.
How's it, GCBS?
I'm very well, thank you. How do you see it?
Well, I just wanted to maybe give a framework to the discussion because you mentioned, well, the way that you set the question up was, should there be a legal imperative? Should you be legally obliged?
Yeah, there are several questions. One is a legal question, the other is an ethical question. And then related to both questions is a third point of discussion, which is just how have you actually handled this if you've ever experienced a scenario like it?
Yes. Well, so I would talk less then on the ethical and just raise a point on the legal side, which is to make a distinction between what's known as a positive law and a negative law. And they are maybe unfortunately named positive and negative, because what a negative law doesn't imply negative connotations. Negative law is a law that prevents you from doing something.
Yeah.
And a positive law is a law that compels you to do something.
That's right.
And if we think about the legal system as being something that's in place to essentially enhance your freedoms within a society, so we are free individuals within a free society, the legal system should be there to enhance those freedoms and not to restrict them. So a negative law, even though it prevents you from doing a particular action, in doing so, what that actually does is also encourage a vast array of other actions. In other words, of all the infinite possibilities of things you could be doing, the negative law prevents you from doing one of them, right? And in many ways, that prevention of a certain action enables other actions. So, for example, because I'm prevented from, say, walking down the street and just assaulting someone, I can now walk freely down the street knowing that no one will assault me, which means now I'm much more free in my actions walking down the street. I don't fear someone assaulting me. I don't have to hire security, you know, personal security to accompany me down the street. So that would be a negative law. The idea would be to enhance the freedom.
My question is, should the law place a positive duty on us to be good Samaritans?
And I would say that in every instance where a positive law is being considered, I would suggest that the default should be towards no, because of the fact that as soon as you are compelled to do something, we have the cases like all your listeners have described where you actually put yourself.
Yeah, but then we can play, then we can obviously toss around different examples. If I hear a kid and see a kid constantly being beaten up by my neighbors or even an adult, it is not true that the only way to intervene is to put myself in harm's way. If I made an anonymous call, for example, I can comply both with a positive legal duty as well as with a social obligation without the perpetrator even knowing who it was that reported that to the authority. So if we exaggerate the scenarios as being restricted to a case where I will put myself at risk of imminent death, then obviously a positive duty is a bad idea. But there's a range of spectrum, and in a country drenched with violence, there will be large volumes of scenarios where the intervention doesn't have to be that existential.
So let me then put a different spin on I don't know if it was a man or a lady that filmed the event, but in filming that event, I would applaud that action because it's now in the public domain and we know exactly what happened. We can allow the law to take its course. Should that person then have taken an extra step and intervened physically? That's the kind of question that you're asking. I would say, no, I don't think that that should be something that's legally mandated on the basis of the idea that positive laws, in fact, far from enhancing freedoms, tend to restrict them.
Yeah, but that's only if you think maximum freedom for its own sake is a good thing. You could make a case for the common good, that if it will help to make the world a safer place for vulnerable people, that it is a reasonable infringement on the freedom, unless you are libertarian, Nick.
I wouldn't say I was a libertarian, but I certainly do take or put a lot of weight on the idea that a personal freedom is very important.
Yeah, I do as well, but it doesn't follow from that positive duties are inherently antithetical to a general commitment towards freedom.
No, and I certainly wouldn't make that point.
Okay, let's leave it there for today.